And you cannot activate stress reduction without external considering. In other words, we have to connect with the effects we have on others and life itself. Because in the end, that's what making a difference really does. It produces endorphins, not adrenaline. To be externally considering is the corollary to having purposeful work. If I continually think about how my bosses will evaluate me or consider me for promotion and pay raises, it's exhausting. Welcome back to Business Second Opinion Podcast. We're always excited to bring you another episode. But first, we want to welcome this month's sponsor, Seed Communities, which uses a regenerative paradigm to develop human beings and businesses by bringing an approach designed from the ground up on how living systems work and change. Most education and change management is based on the transference of the metaphors of how machines operate or rats function in cages. This approach leaves most of the unrealized potential of systems on the table. Shortchanging people and life itself, for that matter. As a member of Seed Communities, I can tell you the difference is profound for the development of myself as a leader and how I grow my own business. When I found Seed Communities, it was like I finally found a way to think about things without all the drawbacks. We hope you'll check out this great regenerative education philosophy at seedcommunities.com. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. And in the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion. As you know by now, usually a contrarian opinion, but one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. And by the way, if you want to learn more about how to work more closely with us, stay tuned at the end of the show. I'm Zach Swartout. And with me, as always, is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big and hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach.
So for this episode, we got an article from a second opinion listener named John Paul Maxfield, who's the co-owner and founder of a wonderful company called Waste Farmers. He wants a second opinion on the idea of burnout. So he sent an article from Harvard Business Review entitled Beyond Burned Out by Jennifer Moss from the February 20th, 2021 issue. So it's pretty recent. And the article itself examines the idea of employee burnout during COVID isolation, which seems like a good companion to our last pod, actually, on employee engagement. Both these articles are written as though the issue is organizational therapy and needs to be corrected with a sort of therapeutic kind of model. John Paul, for his part, was curious about the concept, concerned about the solutions offered, particularly in the article, and wants to know our opinion.
Well, burnout is an ongoing challenge in every work system, everywhere. I know COVID and the isolation that went with it has really made it worse for people. So it's a timely topic as well. Maybe you should tell our listeners a little bit about what the article says.
Sure. So the author proposes that in many cases, burnout is essentially viewed as an employee-specific problem, when in fact, she says, it's an organizational one, which demands an organizational solution. So to help frame up the issue, she offers six main causes of burnout that she found through research done at UC California at Berkeley. Number one, unsustainable workload, right? So she sees as like issues around delegation and work design and stuff like that. Number two is perceived lack of control, either at the employee level, the managerial level, mostly the employee level. Number three is insufficient rewards for effort. Number four is lack of supportive community that happens inside the company. Number five, a lack of fairness and equity that's felt inside the company. And then number six, mismatched values and skills between folks inside the company and the company itself.
Okay. And what did you take away from that? What are her solutions and what do you think about her suggestions?
Right. So let me speak to the solutions first here. So solutions, she's got six of them. So let me walk through these in a stepwise manner here. So number one, first solution, sense of purpose. So in her research, she found that 25% of people who felt a strong sense of purpose didn't feel any symptoms of burnout. So again, one of the solutions she's offering in her research, let me repeat this, 25% of people who felt a strong sense of purpose didn't feel any symptoms of burnout. Okay, just so everyone's clear on that one. Number two, manageable workload, which looks like cutting back meetings as far as I could tell as I was reading through this article. Number three, discussing mental health at work. So the solution was really about creating psychological safety at work, which we've done an episode on previously, by setting up employee resource pages and programs at work to help people manage through more time off, peer counseling, and more employee manager check-ins. Number four, being an empathetic manager, which according to a researcher from Harvard Medical School has three dimensions. First, acknowledging and overcoming your privilege and bias, which we've also covered on a previous episode. Active listening, and then taking action. Number five, support from friends and family. And then number six, crisis prep. So really this is about establishing a burnout prevention strategy now before the next crisis hits. So these solutions, I think, and we'll see what Carol has to say here, but they're well-meaning, right? But they're all starting, I feel like, from the wrong ground, which is that burnout is a problem and we need to solve it by arresting it before it starts, which unfortunately reminds me of my time in healthcare. So there was always some abstract boogeyman issue of the month that needed fighting. One month it was bullying, the next month it was hand washing, and the next month after that it would be burnout. And each issue had its own set of programs, procedures, and policies that would be the focus of that month, and then another crisis would happen, and then we'd be on to the next issue, right? So really nothing ever got solved, and these programs always left people feeling more burnt out because none of this was actually related to work. It just added more work to everyone's plate.
Yeah. I mean, as I listen to you, and I, of course, I read the piece too, and it feels to me like they just are off on several counts. First, the idea that of what they think the source is of burnout, and how, and particularly, of course, they're looking at this during the COVID and the organizational challenges. So I think they're misunderstanding what the source is. Secondly, they're really off on what it takes to manage stress anytime. It isn't just COVID. And if you look at what they're suggesting, they're pretty standard things that have been said for probably all the things you dealt with at healthcare.
Yeah, totally. And the author reports all of this as if isolation is a new situation that we're in, which is also kind of crazy. Although the source has not really changed from 2019, but it does not seem that COVID isolations and screen time are the big reasons that are offered here. The source of thinking here seems to come from this kind of general arrest disorder paradigm that we've discussed before, right? So there's a crisis and things are going haywire and we need to put solutions in place to stop the problems immediately. But Carol, how do you describe what they get wrong or maybe are just not thinking clearly about this?
Yeah, and I think we all get things wrong, including me, when we're not thinking well enough. So that's a pretty good framing of it. I think what they're missing is not really understanding how people work as human beings, what it takes for them. I mean, even literally like the biochemistry. They don't understand how they work intrinsically, you know, stories they tell themselves. They don't understand how we work interactively within a system. They therefore offer us things that are going about the wrong things in the wrong way. And the sad part is that their offerings will make little or no difference, as they have for decades, which you just pointed to. Nothing new is offered here.
And it feels a lot like Band-Aid solutions for sure. And really, there's like no accountability for the mess the organizations themselves have created for generations from how they design work, you know, at least since the Industrial Revolution. But so we've covered this a lot, but maybe it's time to make it clear how it's related to burnout. So how do we start, Carol?
Yeah, no, that's a good idea, because in one way you could say everything we talk about is the antidote to burnout. We have never framed it that way. It's the antidote to so many things about why organizations don't work. But there are work design gaps, like how they've structured work that doesn't fit with how humans process things. And also their capability gaps in terms of every individual and how they learn to manage burnout, manage stress. And I think what we work on points to both of these, but let's start with the organizational one.
Great. Okay. So, and to your point, actually, the authors only kind of tangentially speak about how work design plays a role. But by the way, our listeners can check out our episodes on work design, episodes 111, 113, and 114. Plus, you can check out Carol's book, The Regenerative Business, for an overview of a regenerative philosophy of work design. But Carol, why don't you get us started here?
There are three foundational nuggets, threads I could pull out of this that are related to organizational work design. And one of them has to do with how you help people be connected to their own impact. because we get a little confused and easily depressed and therefore burned out when we can't actually see directly how what we're doing is impacting not only the organization, but the organization, their customers.
And the crazy part is that they offer one paragraph in the whole article on this topic, and they use it to say their sample size and focus was too limited. So they said they couldn't really make suggestions. But I think we can probably do a little bit better than that.
Yeah, it was funny, right? It's their number one suggestion, but they're saying, sorry, we had too few people who weren't knowledge workers who obviously, as you said earlier, fell clear. So if I had to guess about what was going on, I would say that they don't know what purpose and having purpose really means and how you tap into it. Most people assume it means a person feels like they have a purpose because they have skills and talent and therefore value to the organization. You can even see that in their assumption about knowledge workers, and that's kind of their excuse paragraph.
Right. So they focus on knowledge workers, which, by the way, often means they hold specialized knowledge needed by the organization or society. So you can think like an examples of like doctors and programmers and caregivers, stuff like that. But they don't even say in the article which knowledge workers. So we're just extrapolating here, right? So regardless, the knowledge workers research reported that they felt less stress, which likely points to feeling less likely afraid of being laid off or fired, which really is, of course, if they feel purpose, knowledge workers are more directly connected to folks who experience their work and directly able to see their impact, which is a better way to think about purpose, Carol, right? Is that what you think?
Yeah. Purpose to me is also the value. It's really about the value I contribute to people who are going to use what I contribute. And they often are the buyers and users if you're inside an organization. And I can see how I'm making a difference to their lives. So purpose goes across a boundary. It's not me into my organization. It's me out into business customers, maybe a hospital, an education user. So it's not really purpose when it doesn't have a contribution element to it. And we feel purpose then because we can see how others are counting on us. That's why I feel I have purpose. People are counting on me. Especially I'll feel that way if I've chosen the work I'm doing. It's not been assigned, not been delegated. But the contribution factor is what shifts our attention and lowers our stress and lowers our burnout.
We spoke before about the nature of work design, where everyone creates their own personal development and contribution plan, right? And they organize themselves to deliver on it all. And all the while, they track their own contribution to the effects they're having. But contribution isn't even studied here. Merely association with direct work is what's on the table here. It's like the scope of everything that matters ends at the walls of the company.
True. That is exactly what the foundational question here is. And I think it's the first one in something they can see, didn't know what to do with. But again, I think they don't quite understand it. I can feel my own work and my own contribution matters as a part of a team that I'm working with and we're producing something together. Rarely is a worker that's connected to their effect on users burned out. They may feel anxious and have things to work on, but when people count on us, we switch from thinking about ourselves to thinking about them. It's usually their output gets scored when they're inside of an organization, not their effect. So the worker who's really connected is likely not feeling as much stress through COVID because they are the people who are saving lives. Now, that didn't mean they don't get burned out for some of these other reasons, but it's one of the reasons they didn't have a good way to speak about it. Anyway, that kind of burnout is not new because 70% of people repeatedly report on surveys that they're unhappy in their jobs. And when followed up, they often say they don't know what difference it makes. It's a way of saying what we're talking about here. And of course, right now they have the added stress at home because they're actually facing life and death. And you can see it on the news every night. Zach, how does this correlate with stress and burnout for you, pre and post COVID? And how does purpose arise in your life and work and affect your stress and burnout levels?
I think the point of what we're getting at here is that burnout is a thing for sure, right? And stress is real. And COVID has introduced whole new ways of working for a massive number of companies and industries, including my own, games and film. But a key part of how I source the will to continue to grow a small business every day is by remembering to care deeply for our customers and the experiences that they're trying to bring to the life of their customers, which that brings me the most joy. What brings me the most joy is helping to enable their creative growth through our work. Seeing a game start to go from our performances to final polish is magic. Hmm. And honestly, I'm just getting goosebumps just saying that.
Yeah, I know the magic it is for you. So I think you'd agree with me. They don't get any points for identifying the need for purpose since they couldn't talk about what it meant, and especially their COVID remediation of, yeah, talk about it. So this particular solution they have really needs to understand how work design is affecting all this and how delegation is part of the stress-producing factor, because self-directed relationships with buyers and users, when it's built in, you have a whole different experience that doesn't come from the kind of things that they're talking about here, because it is organizational, which they mentioned. But what it really is the inability to be self-managing and the ability to contribute our work and to help success be achieved for our users and our buyers.
And for that matter, Earth and communities as other stakeholders, right? Like, I agree with 0 points and maybe a deduction overall to the score for being pretty unhelpful. So, Carol, before I totally derail us here, what was the second foundational oversight on their part? And by the way, we have 5 solutions left.
Okay. Well, the funny thing is 3 of the 5 come from the same error of understanding what happens to people in such situations and how they can manage to transform it. Because everything they're pointing to here in the kind of solutions are more like trying to move from arrest disorder into a do-good paradigm, palliative care. Like, make people feel better. All that's kind of like sensitive energy. And there's nothing wrong with any of that. But it is more of a medical model than it is a transformative model. By the way, palliative means to relieve the pain without dealing with the cause of the condition, which is what I see happening here. And 3 of their solution, maybe the 4th one even also, since they say you got to have family and friends become more supportive. 3 of the 4 are all based on this error of trying to cure it with doing some palliative things.
Right. So the other 3, which I mentioned before, but in a nutshell, let folks decide which meetings really count. Don't forget to have empathy and provide stress reduction mental health support. Right. So 3 surface ideas, as Carol said, that are all fundamentally about the amelioration of pain.
Yeah. And what is really needed, well, you know what I'm going to suggest, some of it can't start with where we are right now, but there are a few ideas that can give people a start. And everyone needs to be able to feel like the work they're doing is the right work, the right way, the right processes, the right talent. And to get past the old idea of, well, this too will pass, and we help them feel better, give them some ways they can be manage what they can, like meetings. And maybe eventually we'll return to the familiar, but we won't. And what was there before and will stay are the kinds of What was there before is still there, and these solutions didn't work previously, and they're not going to work now.
It's funny, we had an almost identical program at the hospital where I worked, where, of course, burnout was becoming an issue because it was whatever month it was supposed to be. And they decided to pull back on the meetings and make sure managers had more time with their directors and bring in mental health support. So following this formula, except all of that took way more time on top of their regular workload. Plus, that just made the directors feel even more burnt out because they essentially tripled their meeting schedules and it ended up being this complete mess.
God, that's just drives you crazy when you think about why can't people see that? So the work design Through time is what really needs to be worked on. It's hard to know where to start here, but one of the core steps is to move away from trying to externally manage people. Because if we are externally managed, we do not feel in control of our life. If we can move to self-managed connections made with real effects with customers and buyers, we have a real start. That's a very big process, and that's what The Regenerative Business, my third book, is all about. But the greatest stress producer is being directed, being managed, being evaluated by others, because it throws us into an external locus of control, somebody else in charge of my parent, of my life. And it all of what comes at me is behavioral paradigm. Let me do this, and then you'll have this effect. Let me give you this attention, then you'll have that, just as you've ordered. But this philosophy, has to be coupled, that is the self-managing one, has to be coupled with getting rid of the idea that they're internal customers. So we don't work for our boss. We don't work for the next department. We don't work for some function down the chain. From what we can see, no one can count on us. That has to change.
And you cannot activate stress reduction without external considering. In other words, we have to connect with the effects we have on others and life itself. Because in the end, that's what making a difference really does. It produces endorphins, not adrenaline. To be externally considering is the corollary to having purposeful work. If I continually think about how my bosses will evaluate me or consider me for promotion and pay raises, it's exhausting and the perfect material for burnout.
And up until we had isolation, we were managed and manipulated by those things fairly directly. Now it's a little harder for people to manipulate and manage and influence on Zoom. But the Zoom itself is unfamiliar, and that creates a whole stress, and the manager is trying to figure out how to manage us indirectly. When we get continuously exposed to the unfamiliar, it drains the adrenal glands, as you just spoke to, and then we get burnout.
So what do we do? We can't continue with more of the solutions offered by this article. At least I hope not.
Yeah. I think at work, you've got to have, even on Zoom, you've got to have a different kind of discussion, different kind of conversation. I've been doing with many of the folks who are in my education groups, the idea that you need to talk more about those who count on you. Talk about your customers, the distributors, the people who are using their products. How are people being helped by what we do? It evokes meaning, a sense of purpose, of being connected. If we talk only about ourselves and how we feel and how we help each other, we pull back inside. But we can work on that which goes on inside of us by connecting us indirectly, even to those which are outside. And that sounds a little strange, but you know, you don't fix burnout by only reducing the stressors that cause it. You also have to switch to being able to get connected to the real world that people are nourished by and feel purpose from.
I actually noticed in my own company, we had one of our monthly reflection calls after a particularly hard month in shoot. And rather than focusing on what went wrong, we started from a place of thinking of our customer and our process nested within theirs. It was really eye-opening to be able to have a much more uplifting and meaningful dialogue about our and our customer's growth. And, you know, rather than how do we stop screw-ups forever. But I also have to watch my own ruminating and worrying. And that's the second gap you mentioned, right? Capability and learning to manage our own thinking.
Absolutely. That is probably the biggest burnout that's invisible to us. In March, when COVID came in, we all got locked down, I immediately switched the way I was working and started running free public online daily morning meetings. And they were all about how to deal with uncertainty and how to make a difference. I switched those to being a lot about how we grow ourselves in relationship to the world that we want to bring and make a difference to. I knew that the lockdown and the impending global pandemic, which was happening more every day, was going to make me sick if I didn't do something for others.
And did it work?
It worked. It did. It worked for me and all the people who showed up immediately and since then. And I've posted it, so many have shown up since then. And it led to doing the work from this foundational approach, I think, of number three, which is developing human capacity to be self-managing in regard to our state of being. So we always think of self-managing as managing our work out there. The really big self-managing is managing what goes on inside of our being and our mind. How important has it been to you in the last few years to be able to do that kind of work and keep it alive? And what value has it had for you, Zach?
I mean, I don't know where I'd be without the development offered by our school. Like, right, like being able to watch my mind at work and see how I'm getting in my own way has been invaluable. And not to mention, it's given me a way to remember myself in those moments and where to source my thinking rather than getting myself stuck in the same ditch as everyone else.
Yeah, I can see the difference in you, and I can see it in me over years too. And, you know, another thing that people can do, even on Zoom, that's related to this kind of personal development, I believe can really help. And it can bring us back and put us in charge of our state of being. My clients have started book clubs using my books, obviously, workbooks, recorded materials, and in those are a lot of work on self-development while doing business development. People are online doing a little bit of that once a week, maybe even a couple hours, although people, of course, are reluctant to be online for too long. How do you apply the work in our school to avoid stress and burnout or to transform situations into growth ones? You got any specifics on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to kind of what I was just saying in the story I was talking about before. The first thing I would start with is a developmental infrastructure, right? We have monthly reflective meetings where we use thinking frameworks to reflect on ourselves, our customers, and our work. And this has been a small but significant step towards allowing us to remember why we do what we do. And a byproduct of it is lower stress, less feelings of burnout, among other things.
I want to add to that a couple of exercises, or really a couple of sections of an exercise as a total, which leaders, anyone who's leading an event can use. You call for what you were saying is the idea of reflection. By the way, we mean reflection as an inner process on myself. It's not why we say self-reflection. It's not me looking at others. It might be us as a collective looking at ourselves. Here's the process. Anytime you come together at a transition point, first get online, have people discuss how they've improved or advanced something that they've been really working on for their customer or a family member. What are they working on now to keep advancing that? But, you know, it's like getting used to making progress, and it can be personal or work. This is a shift away from check-ins, like how are you doing? What's happening? That will weigh energy down. If you ask what people are working on, what's moving, what's changing, and instead begin to look at what it is you're able to bring about, something pretty important can happen. There are two critical developmental advantages of this kind of reflection. It helps keep us in a self-managing mode. Yep, I'm looking at me. I'm watching me move. I'm not being judged from the outside. I don't have an empathetic manager who's coming and saying, I can see it's hard, but you're getting this done. All that's outside. Instead, this way gives us power over our own thinking, and we can see that we can move it. The other thing that's exciting about it is it actually initiates a culture change. In fact, in companies, this is where I start. Reflection at every transition point. Watch what's moving. It also gets us past this whole polarity evaluation of, well, what's going well for you? What's not going so well? What's good? What's bad? This process of a moving idea of what I'm advancing, what I'm working on now, and where else I could go is a really big shift.
Right. And what you're asking for us to see is what you're advancing, right? Which is our own reflection and our own choices. And that reminds us that there are changes we're actively making.
Yeah, we're in charge of it. The crazy thing is this tends to rewire us toward things that are changing, that are moving. We can see ourselves in a flow of change. We're past the good and bad that keep us static. Every time we ask what's good, what's bad, or any two sides of something, we make us static. If we ask what's improving, what's changing, it's a little known trick of sort that you can play on your brain. It gets used to thinking things are always in motion, and I'm helping with that.
It sounds like refueling, right? Like it produces hope. It's not about now, but gets us to use thinking about progression.
Yeah. And I didn't say as clearly, and probably should. You asked the question about, since we were last together, what have I been working on and how am I making a difference, how it's progressing? The second half of that question has to do, well, and here's what I need to work on next. So I'm seeing myself as in a flow of doing something, but I'm also seeing I'm not done, and talking about what I'm going to work on next. This question, what do I work on next, in order to serve what I'm serving, and the discussion has a huge effect on our brain and our spirit, because we gain mental energy and clarity by having to say, oh, here's a hopeful idea I'm going to try. And we're not going to come back and reporting on whether it worked or not. We're going to report on what we tried, what we learned, what helped advance us, and what we're going to do next. It's always, how are we advancing and where are we going next? Saying it out loud, too, what we're moving and what we're going toward, anchors this in our experience. And everyone is hearing us talk about we're taking it on, not for them to hold us accountable. Nope, that'd be back to external control. But they can feel the spirit of us working on something. So you can also add the question, what does this ultimately serve for those who are counting on us? And now you're back to quieting the adrenaline and back to endorphin producing because we're in external considering. It also really adds of waking up our personal agency.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, it's just such a simple idea, right? But it also changes a culture to one that isn't fundamentally about ego or reactivity. It takes on this more purposeful mode.
Yes, and that's what they recommend, number one, without any suggestions about how to do it. Reflection is the first step to culture change, to stress reduction, and then ultimately to burnout. Because it separates us for a moment from the stress. We're able to get outside of ourselves, watch ourselves, see what's going on, see what's moving, and not be in the muck of the experience. And with practice, we can get really good at noticing that we've gone to a stress reduction mode, and we can begin to think a different way.
Yeah, and when we come out of hibernation, we can start seriously working on redesigning toward a regenerative business where people feel in charge of their work and contribution. They can be growing in externally defined terms, which creates a real purpose, all the while they're developing their capacity as humans to be self-managing.
Right. Give me a bit of a head start on starting that. By the way, I mentioned earlier those morning meetings. There are 55 more exercises like this little shift we can make in reflection. If you go to Facebook, they're in the Regenerative Life Community Facebook group. There are two steps you have to go through. You have to ask to join, which you're probably familiar with, but you have to answer the questions that immediately are asked of you, and then you're in. If you skip working on the question, you never get in. I don't go look at it. I don't go approve people. I set it up. My daughter set it up so that all you have to do is answer three questions, and we're not grading them. So if you're on a phone, you won't see that. You have to scroll down. I have had an unbelievable number of reports of the value, and I've got people who are still every morning getting up because these exercises can be done repeatedly, and people are doing these 55 exercises to put themselves back in charge of their lives. And they report what an incredible stress reducer it is, how it moves them into external considering and internal locus control. I'm in charge of my life, and gives them agency. You also can check out Seed-Communities and learn more about our change agent group. And please join our newsletter and hear about free events and read the books and articles. We have several new learning communities doing this kind of thinking that have started up in 2021. We have one for boards of directors, or they can be advisory boards, they can be fiduciary boards, community boards, for-profit, not-for-profit, hybrid boards. And we have a new cohort of business teams who are also engaging in strategic thinking to begin this redesign of work system. It's a way to use systems thinking, as Zach mentions every time we start, to develop strategy rather than the way we normally do it. Plus, we have an ongoing community for educators in all sorts of domains. We've got about 30 people who are everything from young children to university professors. And we still have a few seats in our women entrepreneurs community. So email me at carol@carolsanford.com if you're interested in any of those.
And dear listeners, don't forget that we still need your help. Please continue to recommend articles or business practices on which you want a second opinion. And thank you all for the suggestion and time. You can email us at carol@businesssecondopinion.com or find us on Twitter at @biz_second_opinion. Also, please don't forget you could still donate to our production costs on the Business Second Opinion webpage.
And if you are interested in the book club I mentioned, which a lot of people are doing as ways to lift spirit, you can get The Regenerative Life or The Regenerative Business, and you can get a fairly extensive, almost 100-page workbook, plus another 6 to 8 hours, depending on which book, a video online to go with all that. And you get 50% on bulk buys through my publisher only. And then we can get you set up and working on a book club, doing these kind of different questions that lift us up. More at carolsanford.com.
This has been Business Second Opinion.